All right, welcome to Talking Taker, episode number 14. Thank you yet again, everyone, for joining us on our encyclopedic exploration, digging up the career of professional wrestling's greatest creation of all time. We appreciate you coming in for this next round of Dead Man Talking. I am Alex Dorio, your host here for the ride, joined along with my co-host and tag team partner. He is Georgia's greatest tax cheat himself, Travis White. How you doing there, buddy?
I'm great, man. I'll get my secrets away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Speaking of that, I can't wait to get this episode in here, just how much you hate IRS. You left us that cliffhanger last week.
Erwin R. Scheister. Oh, yeah. Can't wait.
And those of you listening, we have not discussed this beforehand. We don't have much of a production meeting. We just go.
So we do.
Excited to hear about your hatred for the IRS. So,
yeah. Well, we'll jump into that in just a second. We are here at Royal Rumble 1995. We're going through every pay-per-view match in The Undertaker's career. We appreciate everybody joining us along for the ride, along on this journey. We've had some of our biggest listener numbers the past couple weeks, so we do appreciate you. If you're new here, we definitely are glad that you're listening. Hope you enjoy it. We'd love to hear your feedback and all that stuff, and thank you for joining it along with us. We're excited to kick off another new year here on the podcast, another new year of matches.
We have some international listeners, too. We appreciate that. Shout out to the UK and Australia. Would give a terrible impression, but I'm going to just spare you guys the terrible impression and move on. But yeah, thanks for all the downloads and listens and likes and all the followers on Twitter and everything. It really helps us because, again, we're just two marks doing it for fun. So
that's right.
We appreciate all the feedback, too, as well. So we hope to get some bonus episodes out sometime soon. Maybe if we hit some milestones for Twitter and stuff like that, we'd love to get some special bonus episodes out for you.
Did you see if there was anybody from Finland listening?
Could not find anybody from Finland listening.
Oh, man. We got to sell those Helsinki Hellraiser t-shirts.
We really do.
Yeah, I've got a huge stack of them in here.
I know. Flying off the shelves. Oh, wait.
Oh. I'm wearing one every day just to promote it and just not selling yet.
Oh, it's because it's not 1993 anymore.
Oh, so yeah. That's right.
Nobody wants a t-shirt with a big wrestler's face on it like we used to when we were children.
That's all I want.
They don't do those anymore.
I know.
Yeah.
We should just recreate those old Undertaker shirts with just his face all over them.
Well, yeah, Mattel's brought back the Hasbro like versions of the wrestler figures, so yeah, we should.
Yep.
We should do that on pro wrestling tees. We're just kidding. We don't have pro wrestling tees.
No, but we're working on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a whole page full of ideas in my notebook. I haven't shown them to you yet, but they're there.
Can't wait.
Well, yeah, Undertaker did have shirts. He was pretty popular here, but 1995. It's going to be kind of an interesting year. I say interesting in a very hopeful way because it's match quality wise, it's going to be a bit of a drop off. Quality of opponent wise, I think for sure, it's going to be a bit of a drop off. You know, we talked a little bit the past couple episodes about 1994 was kind of a year really focused on The Undertaker. He got a primary spot on all three pay per views he was in, either in the world title match, main event, big picture of it. And then 1995. Really sharp decline as far as his position on the card. We're going to get to the match, but he's second on the card in this match. And 1995 is going to be all about Big Daddy Cool Diesel. So
yeah.
I was kind of trying to think about, you know, the logic, the psychology of all this, and best I can come up with, and you can tell me what you think about this. I feel like maybe, and I don't know, I wasn't there, I don't have any insider information, but maybe Vince McMahon, the creative team, didn't have as much confidence in Bret Hart being on top. He's a smaller guy. Maybe he felt like he had to have a bigger attraction, a bigger guy on top, so he puts Undertaker in the main event slots for 1994. And then they make the decision to run with Diesel, have the big 7 foot tall, the giant guy on top, and they really want to push him and make him the focus. So they put all their eggs in that basket and let him run on top for 1995. And that's why Undertaker kind of gets shifted more towards the undercard, more to where he'd been kind of before that. I don't know. Do you see that? Do you think there's any other reasons why Undertaker might be pushed back down the card for 95?
No, that's a good analysis because he's – well, aren't they going to meet? He and Diesel are going to meet next year at WrestleMania, right?
They'll meet at WrestleMania 12, yeah.
Yeah, at WrestleMania 1996. So, yeah, maybe that's a good observation. I didn't think about that. I was kind of wondering myself. But as we'll get into this match, we hear that Vince hasn't given up on him. Like, there's a comment he makes, a quote I have that – about his greatness and stuff. So you know he hasn't given up on him. But that could be it. You know, they say, you know, Chris Jericho always says it's like, you know, you're an actor and you're playing a role, you know, and you can't always be the leading man. So, you know.
Right.
And plus, at this point, in January of 95, he's been a face. He being Undertaker, pronouns pal. He's been a face since February of 92. So going on almost 3 years now that he's been a face. And not that it's stale because everybody loves it, but you definitely hear don't hear as much of the crowd reaction to some of the certain things, and I wanted to point that out too as we get into these matches. And it could just be his opponents as well.
So, I think it's the opponents. I think it's 1995 in general is just it's a rough year for the WWF.
It's a strange year. Yeah.
It's probably, you know, 94 to 96 is probably the peak of my childhood fandom. So, you know, in 1995, I was as big of a WWF fan as anybody in the world. But as far as the general population, it's definitely a down year, and the crowds, the match quality, it's all going back and look at it, it's very cartoonish. This is really the new generation right here. That era, Diesel is the leader of the new generation, and you know when you look at that and you're watching all of it, it's very much. It's a lot different than when we started in 90, 91, 92. We're a lot more cartoonish characters, a lot more colors. You know, you can even look at Undertaker's purple gloves and just the lighting. And, you know, I feel like even Paul Bearer with his bigger urn, and Paul Bearer is being more over the top than ever.
It really is. And his makeup is out of control, too.
It is.
I went back and watched some early things, and, like, he has no makeup on, and now he's just, like, dousting. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, this new, what's it called? The new generation.
The new generation.
Because
it
is really, you know, you got Doink and you got all these characters like that and Men on a Mission. It's just, I mean, it's all cartoons, like you said. And that's part of why we do this podcast, too, is to talk about how Undertaker stays. He's the cornerstone of all of this. He's through all of it, too. So it's a transitional time for sure in WWF at this point. And yeah, it's a good observation. I guess Diesel was the new man and new kid on the block, and they were probably also big this time too. 95? No, I don't know.
They were
new
what?
Kids on the block.
Oh,
new kids on the block. Anyway,
probably making a comeback tour.
Yeah, it really is a cartoon, and and Nitro hasn't hit the airwaves yet either, so they haven't had to really kick their game up yet.
That's true.
Ric Flair's back in WCW. I think at this point, Macho Man is gone. He left the end of the year, so he's gone. You know, I don't know if he's debuted in WCW or not yet, but I'm pretty sure he's gone. So you know, you got all these characters from the 80s that are gone, and you're kind of building this new generation, which is what they called it. So, BA Taker's there. He's a young guy still, but he's gonna have to wallow through some crap here in 1995, as are we.
As
are the listeners. We'll try to make it entertaining though.
Well, speaking of crap, here we are: Undertaker versus Erwin R. Scheister, continuing the feud with the Million Dollar Corporation. This match, I didn't really go back and look at too much, but I like I said in the last episode, it had kind of already been building before Survivor Series. IRS cuts a promo in a graveyard. I think there was a few vignettes they filmed.
Yeah.
He repossesses a tombstone of John Doe, spelled D-O-U-G-H.
Okay, yeah.
For weeks, I've been conducting an investigation. As you remember, it all started in front of the funeral home. I knew that my instincts were correct when I accused the recently departed so-called poor soul of cheating on his taxes. And I was right. After doing a quick check of his September 15th quarterly taxes, I found out that he tried to pass off his little girl's birthday dinner as a business expense. So I enforced the penalty immediately. Although it may have seemed that my penalties were a little headstrong or maybe a little stiff, continual infractions were dug up. And as a result, it was my duty to enforce the penalty to the fullest.
In order to repossess something, don't you have to be in possession of it?
I think that's how
first.
That works.
isn't that what re means and to repossess?
Yeah.
Because in this match, we're going to repossess something that they never owned either.
Right.
Like, stop using repossess. Anyway.
That's one of Vince's buzzwords. He just,
oh, yeah.
You can tell.
He loves it. It's like medical facility.
Right.
It's,
he has to say
hospital.
Repossess.
Medical facility. Repossess is definitely one of his on his buzzword list.
But IRS interfered in the Survivor Series main event, but he didn't get the job done. He forgot to close the casket lid, so Undertaker was still victorious. And at some point, IRS has acquired some druids. he's purchased his own druids, which...
Let's be honest. They're basically in a black KKK outfit, right? They have black cloaks and hoods on. I'm like, this is offensive to me. Like, oh my goodness, how did they not see that?
Well,
this particular match is in Florida. Royal Rumble 95 is in Florida. You know, I'm just like, you can't have this KKK outfit there. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just black.
It's black. It's okay.
It's a black outfit, I guess. I guess it's different enough, but I was like, just doesn't age well to me.
Well, what is a druid? Tell me that. What the... I don't know. What is a druid supposed to be?
I don't know. An acolyte? A follower? I'm not sure because I...
What does it have to do with the Undertaker?
I don't know. I don't know because later on they're going to start using creatures of the night and they weren't creatures of the night. He didn't call his fans druids at this time. I don't know.
No.
I don't know what a druid is. So, I know it's a wrestler from backstage with a black KKK
exactly.
outfit on.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah, he's representing the Million Dollar Man, Million Dollar Corporation. He's his next phase of trying to take down the Undertaker for reasons can't really be explained. But yeah, so I mentioned in the last episode that IRS is probably my least favorite wrestler of all time. So let me make the case for that.
It's so bold.
And I felt like that even as a kid. I think this goes back to being a kid. I feel like IRS is the dumbest, most insulting, most stupid wrestling character out of all of them. You know, Duke the Dumpster Drosy, Doink the Clown, Isaac Yankum. Isaac Yankum is pretty down there. The Goon is down there real low. But IRS bugs me the most because he was around forever. He was around for, I think, 4.5 years. He's the wrestling tax man. Okay. As a kid, this is supposed to be he's a heel. He's the big bad guy because he calls people tax cheats. As an 8-year-old kid, why am I supposed to care about that? I don't taxes True. Mean nothing to me. This is Vince McMahon having some grudge with the actual IRS saying, ha ha ha, make an evil character named IRS. What kind of name should we give him? Irwin. That's perfect. Irwin R. Scheisse, the most on-the-nose name of all time. Like, that's such a fake, stupid name. Like, even beyond, okay, I know wrestling is fake and silly, but this is too much. That is just absurd. That's not his name. That can't be his name. He wrestles...
So you're saying they jumped the shark here.
Oh, man. So much. He wrestles in suspenders and a tie for... Why? Why? Why doesn't he wrestle in wrestling gear?
I don't know.
Why does he have to wrestle in that? That doesn't make any sense. And he's not, like, intimidating or tough looking. He's Mike Rotunda.
He doesn't cut a good promo either.
Every promo is just calling whatever city he's in a bunch of tax cheats.
Let me tell you, man, have tax cheat something.
It's, yeah. So what? And I like, okay. Some people say, well, you know, Mike Rotunda's, you know, he's a real solid wrestler. Name me one good, memorable IRS match. There's not
True.
Any. He's an average wrestler, and I'm not a wrestler, so, you know, you can get mad at me if you want for saying that. That's my opinion as a fan. I think he's an average performer. He's not terrible, but he does a lot of headlocks, a lot of chin lock, does an abdominal stretch in every single match, which is the best thing he does. No one does that anymore. I was thinking that as we were watching this, the abdominal stretch where he holds the ropes. I do like that.
Scott Hall move. Scott Hall move. I love that move.
I do like that. I appreciate that. But he wrestles the same match every time. And I felt like when I was a kid, I know it's not true, but it feels like he's on every single episode of every single show. Like every Raw, every Superstars, I always thought, God, there's an... I want to see Hulk Hogan. I want to see Bret Hart. I feel like I had to watch an IRS match every single week. So I just have all this pent-up aggression and frustration and annoyance. And it feels good to get that off my chest after all these years that I just don't like IRS. And I know some people have affection for him. I mean, he's a memorable character. We remember him after all these years, but I can't stand the guy. I think he's the absolute worst of the worst when it comes to professional wrestling. He is the reason why people look at professional wrestling as a joke and make fun of it. So, do you have a rebuttal or any other opinions?
Retweet all of that. I would retweet all of that.
Okay.
Like, no, I just think it's hilarious. I love it. I don't think I ever knew this about you, how much you hated him.
Can't stand him.
You have been holding it inside for at least 21 years.
I think so, yep.
Oh, that's great. No, he really, you're right. I'll be honest, all cards on the table. I've never seen this match until I watched it for this. You know, because IRS blows, in my opinion. Like him either, I don't know, as much as you do. Because I wasn't as avid as a fan when I was young, you know. He didn't invade my television every episode of Raw and Superstars like he did yours. So I absolutely understand. But yeah, you're right. When you pointed out that at this point it's kind of cartoony WWF, kid-friendly. Who cares about the IRS? Like, right. Yeah, you're right. You're 8 years old, 12 years old. Who cares? Like,
that's not your audience. You're trying to. I know Vince McMahon thinks, oh, that's the worst thing ever. He hates the government. He hates taxes. Like, I didn't care as a kid. Like, whatever. I still don't care that much. I don't like paying taxes, but that's not like my idea of the worst thing in the world.
Right. It's just, oh man.
We should move on. Yeah, we should get going.
Well, let me take it from here for a minute. Let you
please
calm down.
Yeah, let me catch my breath.
Take a swig of water for the work man.
Yeah.
There. So we're at the Sun Dome in Tampa, and I think that has a problem with this. You know, Florida's more of a like an NWA territory, WCW. So, because I want to point out that later on, like even this match starts and when it gets going, the crowds is not really as hot as you think. And I don't know if it's because this match is on second on the show, or just because everybody in the crowd feels as hatred toward IRS like you do, or what, I don't know. But it's definitely not the most poppy crowd, and that's throughout the whole show. But you mentioned when our Chuck Norris episode, again, thank you, Chuck Norris. How WWF was bringing in a lot more celebrity involvement, probably just grasping at straws to get viewers, you know, because, you know, they have lost a lot of big stars and stuff. So this show opens up with Pamela Anderson, who looks, man, she looks so young. Goodness gracious. Yeah. I was like, goodness, she's so young here. But it was 22 years ago. Almost 23 years ago.
Yeah.
She shows up in a limo, and like all the B team is outside to greet her. You got
Doink and Dink.
Yeah. You got Mabel, Oscar, everybody. All those chumps are out
Bob
there.
Bob Holly, I think, was out there.
Yeah. Sparky Plug. They're all out there. But anyway, that was just. I just want to point out that there's a lot of celebrity involvement from here, and then WrestleMania is going to have a lot more too.
Yeah.
A lot. I don't even know where some of those celebrities come from. We'll get to that next time. But here we got Lawler and Vince on commentary. Is this the first time they've been on commentary together?
No, we had SummerSlam.
Oh, SummerSlam. That's right.
Yeah.
They did. So I did go back and watch a promo from the Raw the previous week, 6 days before, and Taker gives us a little quick promo. He says, you're going to come face-to-face with the Reaper and pay the consequences. I don't know if the word pay is supposed to be a pun.
Probably.
On the thing. But anyway, the Million Dollar Corporation is then on the King's Court. Again. King's Court. What a great segment.
Right.
So good, man. So good. But it's got DiBiase, Tatanka, Evil Hill Tatanka. You know, we saw him turn at Survivor Series, I think it was. Bam Bam, King Kong Bundy, IRS, and these two druids, as we already mentioned. And DiBiase cuts a promo. And again, but I want to say, as bad as IRS is, and I don't even like King Kong Bundy either, Tatanka at this point has jumped the shark for me, too, as a fan. I see nothing in him as a heel. The involvement of this corporation kind of permeates the whole card throughout the Royal Rumble and even as we enter into WrestleMania and then with Undertaker throughout the rest of the most of the year, honestly. So it is neat to see, even though this is kind of not like not the varsity team, you know, of superstars, they still like they have an involvement with everything. And that's one thing I think is missing nowadays. And we don't need to get into that, but it's really cool to see everybody playing a part and having an involvement with a stable, you know, with the tag teams and then with the heavyweight and then with, you know, just a grudge match against the Undertaker. Like, it's really neat to see that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I miss that too. You don't really see that hardly ever anymore.
Yeah. But he DiBiase has a promo. He's going to, IRS is going to put you 6 feet under.
Erwin R. Seister is going to send you back where you came from, 6 feet under. He's going to bury you, Undertaker, and then you will be gone. I will have rid you of the corporation and the WWF. You see, Undertaker, the only thing dead that I like are dead presidents, and I've invested a lot of them to see to it that you are no longer around.
What a matchup that's going to be.
Pretty good line. But, you know, they're involved. In the tag title match here, the Undertaker match, and the Royal Rumble, you know, so it's just a really cool concept. But anyway, back to the show. DiBiase and IRS come out to DiBiase's music. Again, I like that they're using his music. Everybody that comes out uses his music. I love that about stables. They don't all have different music when they come out. So,
and he has great music, too.
Huh?
He has great music, too.
Oh, he does. He does.
And I love that little light, that little spotlight that looks like the dollar bill with his face on it.
Oh, yeah, so good.
I love that.
On the yeah, it's so good, man. But, I was Halliburton. So good, man. The big old Halliburton briefcase that all the, you know, everyone used to carry in the 80s and early 90s. And I think that's what the money in the banks are nowadays. They're like those Halliburton briefcases. They just have a horrible sticker on the side of them. But no Druids come out, though.
They don't come out at first.
Right. At first, they're not out. And then, you know, IRS, your boy, gives a promo, and he says, this is all he says. He says, no one will rest in peace until you all pay your taxes.
That's it.
That's it? That makes me want to do the Scott Hall finger wiggle at him, like, ooh.
Who cares?
Like, how is that supposed to draw
a
heat?
It doesn't.
No one's going to rest in peace until you pay your taxes.
That's what you just said. No one cared about this match because no one is intimidated by Erwin R. Seister.
A 9-year-old kid in Tampa, Florida, at the University of South Florida Fun Zone, or whatever it's called, Florida Zone. Sundome. Excuse me. My apologies. If I'm a 9-year-old kid, like, I'm like, Dad, what's that mean? Like, what is he talking about? I don't know what tax. I don't know what that is. So I just wrote lame promo. Just lame. But now I do want to talk about something super exciting.
Yeah. This was great.
Why don't you take it? You take it and say it. Cause...
Well, we got a callback to something from one of our. I think it was our first episode.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you always loved the monster truck Gravedigger, one that everybody remembers, a classic Hall of Famer. I don't know if there's a monster truck Hall of Fame, but I'm sure Gravedigger is in it or will be in it.
His first ballot.
Absolutely. Well, we said something like, I wonder if Undertaker and Gravedigger ever had a crossover. Why didn't they ever have a crossover? That would have made a ton of sense. Well, on commentary, they mention, as The Undertaker is coming out, that apparently the night before the Royal Rumble, that The Undertaker appeared at a monster truck rally with the Gravedigger truck. Which
his favorite monster truck, Vince says.
I popped huge for. I got so excited. I tried to find footage of it. I looked all over the place. I couldn't find anything, man.
I started researching. There's some monster truck association. I started researching everything. I found something from like the month afterward. I could not find that night on YouTube anywhere or any website anywhere, but I really wanted to find it. But yeah, apparently Undertaker was there with his favorite monster truck and mine, Gravedigger. Again, so, you know, shame on us for not knowing. There wasn't much opportunity. They capitalized on it.
But they did.
Just goes to show you, man, like, again, this is January 95, so I'm 9 years old here, like, That would make me so excited to see Undertaker. Like,
see
him and Gravedigger together. Like, that's just, man.
Well, they said there were 40,000 people there at this monster truck rally. So a lot of people were excited. And then the King says to Vince, I heard you spent your honeymoon at a monster truck rally. It's just like, King was so much better back then. I still love King. He's still one of my top 10 wrestlers of all time, probably. But,
absolutely.
He was really great in the 90s, man. He was on fire.
He's not Heenan, but he's the best next best to Heenan at this point, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, not going to get anybody closer to that. At this point, in 1995, you know, he really does have some one-liners. And this is before he's yelling puppies throughout right. the Attitude Era and stuff, when he can still be a heel and not a caricature of himself, you know? Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, man, super awesome callback to episode one with Gravedigger and Undertaker. So, again, mad props to Vince McMahon for letting Undertaker visit that, because I wanted to see a video. I wanted to see if he was in character. I mean, I'm sure he was. You know, I want to see that. So if anyone listening was there,
yes,
or
please.
Can find that, if you were at Tampa, Florida on January 21st, 1995, please let us know. I want to see a picture of this, man.
We will send you a t-shirt. That'd be super. If you can bring up some footage of that.
Tell you what kind of t-shirt. We'll just send you a t-shirt.
Yeah, we'll send you a t-shirt. It'll be good. We promise.
Well, yeah. But, yes, yeah, so that's really cool. So, anybody that's been following along with us from episode one, there's your little Easter egg. Little Easter egg.
Yes. And then, like, so Undertaker comes out. Paul Bearer, like, they get in the ring. This was weird, man. Paul Bearer just starts, like, wailing. I don't know if you noticed this. And then I think he was trying to get the crowd to chant Irwin. But it's just like, it just sounded like he was crying there for a minute. And then the commentary team just drops out for like 30 seconds. Man, there's just like nothing happening in the ring. And then the commentary team is silent. They don't say anything at the very beginning before anything happens. It was really weird. There's just dead air and nothing's happening before the match starts. I don't know what that was about. But then Irwin sneak attacks Undertaker with that's awful looking drop kick to start the match.
Oh, my word. Yeah. I mean, my 5-year-old son could get one better than that. It was so it was so bad. And that's not again, Mike Rotunda is supposed to be a good worker, and we're not wrestlers, but it really did look poor. Like, that was bad. So.
And Undertaker no-sold it, so.
Yep. So, but yeah, they do like 2 minutes of stalling before. And yeah, that no-sold chicken. And he turns and he's like, IRS is like, you know, yay, woohoo. And he turns around and sees that Undertaker's behind him and he bails out. And Vince says that IRS has the technical skills to rival Bret Hart.
He did.
Did you catch on commentary?
I did.
He said, such a good word. He's got the technical skills to rival Bret Hart.
That was
and
absurd.
WOW. Wow. I was just like, holy cow. Like, you've got to be kidding me. He doesn't hold a candle to Bret Hart, man. If he does, IRS was not the venue for him to display it, you know?
Right.
You know, like Eugene, Nick Densmore was a phenomenal worker, but as Eugene, he couldn't display that to us, you know? So maybe, let's give Rotunda the benefit of the doubt here. Maybe he really was good, but IRS was not his venue to show us how good he was. But yeah. Then there's lots of ducking and powdering out to the outside and... I did write that with all this ducking and he takes a powder to the outside and everything, like, he gets really good heat from the crowd. There's a lot of, you know, so even though 9-year-old kids don't know what taxes are, they know to boo the bad guy here.
Right.
So,
they understand that part. The next cool thing that happens was Undertaker grabbed IRS by the tie and just, like, tosses it, does, like, a hip toss by grabbing him by the tie. That was cool looking. I did enjoy that, which... Of course, I mean, if you're wrestling a guy with a tie, it's just fair game. You're asking for that. Yeah.
Did you notice what happened right before that with Paul Bearer?
Which, I didn't write that.
He's staring at his reflection.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. His new favorite thing.
Cameraman's right there. Kevin Dunn calls the, you know, camera shot. It's right there. It's so good. But yeah, I like that, you know, tie toss because, yeah, you're right, man. It's fair game. You got a tie on. I'm going to use it against you, you know? That's what happens.
It was good.
And then he goes for old school after that, and DiBiase comes up on the apron for distraction. And after that, and Taker grabs him, and the crowd cheers, you know, because Undertaker's going to get his hands on DiBiase. But then IRS comes, you know, from behind and tries to run into him. Taker moves out of the way, and he almost collides with DiBiase. And the crowd really wants him to do it, you know. So that was a cool little like spot, you know. The crowd does want him to collide. So
did you know, like, when IRS got tossed out right after that, there's these two guys in the front row and they stand up and high-five each other.
Did you hear what Lawler said?
No, what did he say?
He goes,
"Look at the
those idiots high-fiving down there.
He said that, which is what I said to myself, like, as I'm watching it. And as I'm doing it, it was like Jerry Lawler was narrating my life, because he said that. These idiots in the front row high-fiving. I mean, these dudes are some Florida Gator fans, man.
Oh, yeah.
They are just in these their jorts and their...
Grown their, men that are like, high-fiving.
Body glove, like, or probably, I don't know, Guess jeans, like a... tank top or something. They're just like half off. Like, yeah, man. Like, it's so cool.
It's great.
But you know what? When we go to wrestling shows, we get into it too. So, you know, I don't wear that. But yeah, it's just cool that Lawler was like, "It's idiots from over high fiving."
It was funny. Yeah.
So then there's some dissension amongst the ranks here. You know, IRS and DiBiase getting in each other's face a little bit, and DiBiase runs away and brings out the two guys in the black outfits.
The Druids. Yes. I wrote down, this is so cheesy, but, you know, in a way, it almost kind of helps add to the mystique of The Undertaker, because
yeah.
It feels like every match, someone's always trying to have to get help to beat him.
That's
whether
true.
It's Yokozuna having to get all these extra people, Kamala had his two managers, Giant Gonzalez had his managers, like, no one can beat The Undertaker on their own, so IRS having to go get more help to beat The Undertaker. Undertaker is still protected. He's still made to look really, really strong. Even if the guys at IRS has to go get are a bunch of goofs that, you know, they can't keep their masks on, man. Like, they keep having to adjust their hoods and put them back over their eyes. They can't keep them on.
At one point, one of the guys, the taller one, his nose is sticking through the eye hole. I'm just dying laughing, like, holy cow, that's so bad. But, like, you can, like, as they start getting into it, you can see they have, like, their wrestling trunks and boots on underneath.
Yeah.
They're not even, like, in, like, jeans and no black shirt. They're just, like, two guys from backstage that just threw these cloaks on.
We need to ask, Bruce Pritchard or somebody who the Druids were for that show.
Even if you make something up, it'll be fine. So.
Yeah.
but, yeah, they're out, and Undertaker goes for old school again, which he's done that multiple times in these matches. He goes for it multiple times.
And it always backfires the second time he does it.
Never works, yeah. Because the Druid here shakes the ropes, and he gets thrown off the turnbuckle. Undertaker does. So now they're
The ref was not looking this time. I was thinking, how is this not a disqualification? But they zoomed out, and the ref was being distracted by DiBiase.
Yeah,
because
he was, so.
Like, Harvey Whippleman did that in one match, like, right in front of the ref, and it was like, okay.
Yeah. speaking of refs, we can get a good referee in the next match we hand.
Yeah.
So they're both down, and Taker doesn't sit up, and the crowd, I wrote the crowd pops, but it's not as loud as usual. And again, I don't know if it's just, like, a diminishing returns thing at this point. We've seen it for the last 4.5 years, or if it's just, you know, he's with this opponent, they don't really care. But he gets closed on over the top rope by IRS, lands on his feet, and he immediately goes and attacks the Druids, which is always a cool spot. He always lands on his feet, you know? But
just
he just kind of no-sells it and starts
going after
the Druids. Yeah.
It's great.
And IRS hits an axe handle off the apron, which, you know, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Axe handle off the apron. So, and he throws his head into the stairs. Then the Druids attack from behind the ref's back and throw Taker back in the ring, and this is where IRS does the abdominal stretch with the ropes for assistance, which, again, I say it's a Scott Hall move. He did it, I mean, a diamond stud, he did it as Razor Ramon, he did it as Scott Hall. I love when Scott Hall does that. It's such a good heel move, too.
It's a good heel move. I wrote down, I think Miz should steal that. I could see him doing that. Someone needs to bring it back.
He does the abdominal stretch, but he spanks people, but, like, Miz should do it. And
a heel needs to do it, yeah.
Yeah,
Dolph Ziggler could do it. I could see him.
Oh yeah,
pulling that off.
So good, man. I love that's just a simple move, and it draws a lot of heat.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. So at this point, commentary starts talking about is there ice or formaldehyde in Undertaker's veins, and I think Vince says it's up for debate. I'm like, who? But then Lawler says, I wrote this. He wrote one of the meanest things anyone on human history has ever said to anyone.
As opposed to the obese Paul Bearer, I heard his blood type is Ragu.
Ragu?
Yeah.
Holy crap. You can't say that to someone.
That's one of the funniest things anyone has ever said.
It's so good. It's so good. I love it, man. I love it. It's a lip, but I was like, what a mean guy.
Yeah, be a star, King. Come on.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that wouldn't fly now.
No,
you have to go online on Twitter and apologize.
But you know, Paul Bearer, he probably gave him that line. Like he was totally fine with that. He probably thought that was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. But, oh, absolutely. I was just like, man, he said That obese Paul Bear. Like, what did he ever do to Lawler? He's so mean to him.
I don't know how Vince kept a straight face during any of this stuff.
As you can hear, I'm laughing the whole time. So,
exactly.
I would be a horrible commentator. I just laugh at all the funny things they say. I like Jerry Seinfeld. He laughed at all his scenes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I have no idea. Or Vince just mutes himself. Or
yeah, the press probably kicks, would actually happen. Yeah.
Kicks Lawler underneath the table. Who knows, man?
Well, Taker, he gets a hip toss here, misses the elbow drop, sits up. IRS hits, I don't know if it's his finisher now. It used to be his finisher. He hits a jumping clothesline. It used to be called the write-off, but they don't call it that in the match. But that used to be his finisher, and doesn't pin off of it. Instead, he starts going for elbows instead and misses one. Or he goes for a splash, and he misses one. And then they do a... little double drop down. Oh, excuse me. Yeah.
It looks so bad, too. The old, run the ropes, double collision in the ring. I mean, I don't know what... Something was off there. I don't know.
It was.
Like, it looked so bad. It was ugly. Taker is really crisp in the ring, and apparently Rotunda is, too, but they didn't have chemistry here, and as we head into the finish here, too, it gets pretty sloppy from here on out. But now there's a druid in the ring, and he lays IRS on top of Undertaker as they do the double collision.
Yeah.
And Taker kicks out, and there's another druid on the apron. He's being choked by Undertaker at this point, and he gets hit by IRS by mistake, and Undertaker takes IRS up for a tombstone, and the druids are back on the apron. And they just keep hopping up and down the apron, and this is the part where you can see their trunks and their boots, and the dude's nose hole, or the nose is through the eye hole. So he's got IRS up. He kicks both the druids in the gut.
While he's holding IRS. That's impressive, man.
It is. The IRS reverses it, and he clotheslines Undertaker. At this point, the crowd's coming alive, though. They're stomping on the bleachers now. There's bleachers here at the stadium here, and they're stomping on them, which always is a cool effect,
I think Paul Bearer was on the outside, trying to get him into it, too.
Yeah,
a good manager.
Yeah, he is. He doesn't have to earn,
Right.
Or no. Wait. Yeah.
He did have it. Yeah.
He doesn't earn. Yeah, I'm sorry. He doesn't earn. I'm getting... Spoiler alert. So, crowd stomp, and then Taker does he sits up, and then he just does a choke slam, does the hands folded over the chest.
That was it.
And he wins.
Yep.
And
no
then
tombstone.
He just kicks IRS and rolls him out of the ring, and I just wrote that ending looked a little botched. I wasn't sure what went wrong. Maybe it wasn't botched, but it kind of came out of nowhere, which is cool sometimes, but IRS was, he was just I don't know, he wasn't really down, coming from underneath.
Right.
Undertaker just hits a random choke slam and he wins. Again, I was glad it was over because it's 12 minutes and 21 seconds.
Yeah, it's a long one for these ones that we've been doing.
Yeah. Again, the first, literally the first 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes are just stalling.
Yeah,
and
they don't
going
touch.
In and out of the ring. So, shave that off and this match would have been 9 minutes probably. But it didn't flow at the end. Again, not the greatest. 1995 was not the greatest in-ring year of Undertaker's career, but it's not his fault. It's what he's given to work with. So, this is the part I wanted to talk about. Vince McMahon on the commentary says, another victory for the most phenomenal superstar of all time.
Oh, wow.
Of all time.
Of all time.
He's, I went back and rewinded to write it down because I wanted to hear. He says, another victory for the most phenomenal superstar of all time.
He is the Phenom, so he's the most phenomenal one.
Yeah. Pre AJ Styles phenomenal.
Exactly.
But again, that just shows even though Undertaker's slipping down the card, he's feuding with Ted DiBiase and these goons. Vince still loves him,
Oh, absolutely.
And, still putting him in a good position, here to go on. And at this point, afterward, just a lot of shenanigans after the match.
Yeah, the druids attack him in the darkness.
Yeah.
Well, the lights go off for Undertaker and the druids jump in and attack him, and the lights stay off for a while. Then the bell starts ringing again, which they never do that anymore. When someone's beating somebody up afterward, they don't ring the bell to signal that the match is over anymore. I miss that. Here comes Ted DiBiase's next plan to foil the Undertaker, lumbering down the aisle, the walking condominium, King Kong Bundy.
Former WrestleMania headliner, right? WrestleMania 2?
Yeah.
This is headed into the next feud. We'll talk about it on episode 15. But, You know, he is, even though it's King Kong Bundy, he's kind of not been doing much. He still is a WrestleMania, former WrestleMania headliner, you know, headline WrestleMania against Hulk Hogan. So
yeah, he had just come back at Survivor Series after,
yeah,
I don't know, like 7 years or something like that from being gone. So they're trying to repackage him and push him. They do a stare down in the middle of the ring and the crowd goes mild. Man, yep. Like they don't care.
And this is where Iris knocks Paul Bearer down and takes / repossesses the urn. Again, you can't repossess something you're possessed. So anyway, yep. That's just the old tax, you know, pun. You gotta get in there. And then Bundy's beating up Taker inside the ring, and Paul Bearer is orchestrating the crowd like a pro outside. I mean, he looks like a maestro out there. He is just like swinging his hands around and getting the crowd to chant and cheer, and they're cheering and stomping on the bleachers to get Taker to rise. And at this point, Bundy and company have bailed, and Undertaker staggers.
Well, he beats him up him in the corner, hits the avalanche, his big running splash into the corner, and Taker's out. And yeah, Taker. They're saying that he doesn't have the urn anymore, so he doesn't have the power to heal back up. So he's just like stumbling and falling down as he's walking back up the aisle.
Which again, commitment to the character right there. He's not letting that part of the story slide, you know, because he could have just walked up the aisle, but like he still is letting this character, you know, he doesn't let it down, man. Like until he walks through the grill position. Well, as far as we know, he might keep it up backstage.
He might. Know?
That the urn is a big part of his mythology, and he's selling, you know, how much that has an effect on him not to have that there present.
Yeah, and on the next episode, or at his next match, kind of see Bundy doesn't quite do the same for the Undertaker, but we'll talk about that on the next episode. So, yeah, a kind of a symbolic start to 1995, I guess, in a way, because it's going to be not the prettiest match, and it's not going to be the prettiest year, but where would you rank this in the level of the 5 years that we've covered so far?
This is definitely above Gonzalez and probably one of the Kamala matches. I do like the casket match with Kamala.
Yeah.
Just because of the nostalgia of it. But, you know, it's definitely bottom rung, you know. It's no Jake Snake, it's no Hulk Hogan, it's none of those, but, you know, it's not great. But again, Undertaker doesn't let that affect his performance, you know.
Right.
Or the character, you know, the character is still strong, and he lives that character, and Paul Bearer does his job too, like he's supposed to. So, what about you? What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, same thing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not ever excited to go back and watch IRS, so... Watch at your own risk. That's what I would say for anybody out there. But we do appreciate you watching and following along. You can catch up on everything we've got going on Twitter, Facebook, at Talking Taker, on all those platforms. We are available to download on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube. We would love to connect with you. We'd love for you to subscribe, leave a comment, give us a rating, let us know how you feel about all that stuff. We do appreciate that. We read them all. I wanted to read real quick a text that I got from a friend of the show, Billy the Q on Twitter. He had a comment about our Royal Rumble and SummerSlam. It was about SummerSlam 94, I guess. He texted me the other day. He said, "It seems like the Taker versus Faker storyline was taking points from the death of Superman, the reign of the Superman, and the return of the Superman. With the death being the 1994 Rumble, the reign is the sightings and the debut of the Undertaker, and finally the return is the match at SummerSlam 94. I can only imagine some writer was reading that Superman story arc and pitched it to Vince." So I thought that was... interesting analysis and great points that we didn't pick up on our episodes.
Yeah, I'm ashamed of myself. I'm a huge DC Comics fan, so yeah, that is very true. That's right around the same time as that storyline, so very cool. You know, even if no one was reading that, just coincidence, really cool though.
Yeah,
thanks, Billy.
It totally fits. That was good. Shout out to Billy. Shout out to my buddy Robert. I know he listens. He lets me know about it every Sunday morning at church, and appreciates. our episodes, and we appreciate him listening. We appreciate everybody out there listening. It's awesome. It's fun. We're having fun just doing it, so it's cool that anybody at all is listening to us. So we do appreciate it. And WrestleMania 11 next time. So watch it if you want to follow along with us.
Yes, absolutely. And if you were there at Sundome on the 2nd, please let us know. If you were at the Monster Truck Rally on January 21st, by all means, please let us know. And other than that, ladies and gentlemen, take her easy.
First I'll tell the rest of these tax cheats, and then I'll tell you. No one, and I mean no one, will rest in peace until you've paid all your taxes.